Hello and welcome to the monthly podcast of the Vestibular Special Interest Group of the Neurology Section of the American Physical Therapy Association. Today's topic is vertigo in the emergency department. I will be your moderator today. My name is Wendy Kriegels, and I'm a physical therapist on faculty at the University of Colorado. And I'm happy to introduce our speaker today, Lisa Tenbarge, who's also a physical therapist. And Lisa, if you could please give us a brief introduction of yourself and where you work.
No problem. Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for having me. But as Wendy said, I'm a physical therapist. I work at Flagstaff Medical Center in Flagstaff, Arizona. It's my 24-year anniversary today. I started at FMC 24 years ago today. And I have been practicing exclusively in the emergency department for 9.5 years. So I did about 15 years of outpatient therapy prior to starting in the emergency department.
Excellent. So you're one of our pioneers in bringing physical therapy to the emergency department. That's exciting.
It's been a really good journey.
Yeah. Give us a brief overview for a lot of vestibular physical therapists. The emergency department may be new. So tell us, you know, what the current appropriate term is. A lot of people still use emergency room, ER, but we seem to have shifted to ED. Could you just clarify for us what the most appropriate term is?
That's really what's being used in most places that I know is emergency department, and I think it's just streamlining with the rest of the hospital systems. All of the other departments are referred to by department, not room. I think ER is just a term that people are very familiar with, but really the more current appropriate term is ED.
Okay, great. So we'll refer to that as we move forward. So Lisa, give us a brief overview of physical therapy services in the emergency department as a whole and what the role of the physical therapist is.
Absolutely. We provide services 8 hours a shift between 11 and 7:30. So we start at 11 a.m. and go till 7:30 p.m., and that is largely because the majority of the types of patients that are appropriate for us, after looking at the kind of who comes into the ER and when, that seems to be the time where there are the most people that are appropriate for us to see. So we provide kind of a wide variety of assessment, treatment, education for diagnoses that range, I would say, primarily musculoskeletal. We see a lot of whiplash injuries, a lot of low back pain, a lot of orthopedic injuries that are non-fractured. So if it's fractured, there's less that we do at the moment, although we do some splinting and a lot of education. But the vestibular portion of the patients that we see is certainly fewer patients on the whole. It's probably more like 2 to 3%. Mm-hmm. In general, but they are definitely a percentage of the patients that we see. With musculoskeletal patients, we actually provide a more specific diagnosis. So, in other words, as an example, prior to having physical therapy in the ER, an ER physician, if somebody had a knee injury, that they did X-rays and there's no fractures, and they may diagnose the patient with an internal knee derangement and send them to orthopedics. When we come in, we do a really specific musculoskeletal exam and say this is a grade 2 MCL sprain with no meniscal involvement, and here's how we're going to approach this from a stability and early education standpoint. And so the outcomes, I think, are much improved just by having us involved in that early interventive piece.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That sounds great. So tell me how the flow of someone coming in with vertigo would go in your emergency department. How are they triaged, and by which healthcare professional are they triaged first?
Okay. So when somebody comes in with vertigo, the first stop for them is the triage area, and that's done by a registered nurse, typically, and they're going to do an initial assessment, they're going to do vitals, they're going to look at their med list, they're going to check for neural signs, they're going to take their history, is this something that they've had in the past, all of those things and determine an acuity. So they sort of rate the patient, if you will, based on the other patients that are waiting, and so they give them either a higher acuity rating, which will determine how quickly they're brought back to be evaluated by the physician. The goal is always to get them to the physician as quickly as possible.
Okay. And then how do these patients funnel through? They would go to the nurse. She would determine, gosh, this really sounds like BPPV. Do they go to the physician then, or are there other tests and measures in the interim before they get to you?
Right, and so typically there are some triage protocols that allow the nurses to order some tests. To my knowledge, they don't have any that are specific to vertigo.
Okay.
So the patient would then, but they typically get a higher acuity rating because many times their chief complaint is dizziness.
Right.
But they may be throwing up. They may be, they may be having their rating acuity-wise typically brings them back a little quicker to the physician. And so the physician then takes a history and makes the determination or starts to do the rule out for any more more dangerous disorders, if that's a better way to say that. So in other words, a cardiovascular incident or some sort of, metabolic problem or, medication issue or whatever it is that may be an immediate life-threatening issue. And if so, then sometimes they may order tests that are relevant to that. So if they screen them and they think, oh, this has a central nervous system, they feel like it has a central nervous system component, then they're going to be more likely to then order a CT scan or an MRI of the brain or start to do lab work to try to get an idea that way. Now, when they do their initial examination and the signs and symptoms are really pointing more towards a positional vertigo issue, then that's when they typically will get physical therapy involved. So they'll then initiate a physical therapy consult. And because we're housed in the ER, we're not on an on-call system. We're actually there. We have a space in the emergency department. So we're immediately available. And then we go in, and typically what the physical therapist does in the emergency department setting is we still perform our own examination. So we're still going through a cranial nerve screen and checking the range of motion of the neck to make sure they're going to be able to tolerate testing and maybe doing DBI testing or any other testing that seems, or history taking that seems appropriate, making sure there's no other neurologic indications. And then most typically I would say the hall pike is probably the most common test that I do in the ER to determine evidence of BPPV. I would say the hall pike, there are a few of our physicians that are familiar with it that do perform it. But a lot of times, when I talk to them, they may or may not have been looking at or looking for nystagmus. So the differentiation of specific types of BPPV are not made at that point. So the physical therapist then will go in, do the hall pike, make a determination of canalithiasis versus cupulothiasis and which canal the BPPV is present in, and then take them through the canal through positioning if it's indicated.
Okay, great. And do you find that the hall pike seems to pick up the majority of your positional vertigo, or do you also do a roll test or something for the horizontal canal?
Because the horizontal canal is less common, I don't tend to do it as a standard.
Right.
But if it was indicated, when doing the hall pike, if it was indicated, then I would add that. I would say too that will ask the physicians, and this was sort of a learning curve for me in the ER, but so commonly what they would do when they first came in is that they're interested in making the patient more comfortable, and so they would immediately give them Anavert or Meclizine to help quell their symptoms. And so we've talked a lot about, hey, if you are considering that it's positional vertigo, could you wait? If you want to give them medication for nausea, okay, but can you hold on the methylzinger antivert so that we get a good, accurate test?
Great. And how did you... how did you broach that with your physicians? Because it's a little bit of the physical therapist delving into their turf of medications. Would you say you did that after you had already had a good, long kind of history and relationship built? Or did you do that from the get-go?
Well, kind of when we started treating vestibular patients, it was something that we just talked to them about. And what I found with the ER physicians, I found them incredibly open. They really know what they're good at, and by working with physical therapists over this extended time period, they've really gotten to know what we're good at. So they are very open to communication when it comes to physical therapy diagnoses and things that we can do and treat in the ER. So they're very, it's a very collegial relationship, at least in my setting. And they are very open to those conversations. So I didn't find any issues at all with asking that. Now, I have to sometimes remind them.
Right.
that comes up frequently because it just is one of those things they don't think about. And they forget to say wait until after physical therapy consult, and so the nurse gives it ahead of time. But the nurses are actually becoming more and more accustomed to that, too, where now even if the physician orders it, if they've ordered physical therapy, too, they'll actually wait, even though it hasn't been specifically said by the physician. The nurses will wait because they know that we've said, you know, please hold on that if you can before prior to our evaluation. Because frequently, the reality is, if it is BPPV, and your listeners know this, but it can be treated so successfully with the kennel through positioning that frequently then the medicines aren't necessary.
Right.
So I find that was a really long answer to your really actually
that's
short
okay.
question, which is they're actually very open to conversations. I found them to be very open to that, especially when they understand why they don't have a problem with holding on that at all.
I think it's a great model for team cohesion and collegial relationships amongst nursing physicians. I don't know if you get residents coming through, but I mean, I think physical therapy, I love the model that the physical therapists are really shoulder to shoulder with the other health care professionals, and you're all seen, you know, somewhat as equals with strengths in different areas. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I would say almost across the board, there are, in the ER setting, the nurse is such a patient advocate that if the better relationship that physical therapy has with nursing in the emergency department, I think the more successful they are because they are our advocate. Frequently, if I'm seeing a patient, they may see indications for physical therapy, especially since we've been in there. The longer we're in there, the more they know about what we do, and they think, oh, the last time I had this patient with this sort of physical therapy is very successful with this. So they think, even if it hasn't come up with the physician, or even if it hasn't been a patient that's been identified by me, they're frequently the ones that say, hey, do you think this would be indicated? And so we rely on them a lot, actually. But it is definitely a very collegial relationship.
That's great. And now, initially, you had brought up whiplash, and I'm just curious, because I can imagine the emergency department sees a fair number of whiplash people with whiplash. Is any vestibular piece a part and parcel to you evaluating someone with whiplash, or do you tend to focus more on the cervical injury initially and then maybe order follow-up? Or do you do, say, a hall pike on everyone who comes in with whiplash, or, you know, what kind of triggers you to look for vestibular as well as cervical problems?
I think that what I found in treating the people that come in, not with whiplash, but with vertigo, there's always a question about, have you had trauma, you know,
okay.
any trauma, any whiplash injuries, that kind of thing. It's a common standard question when evaluating someone with vertigo in the ER. I would say conversely, when I'm evaluating someone with a cervical injury, like a whiplash injury, whether or not I include the hall pipe would be completely symptomatic. If they complained of symptoms of dizziness or symptoms of movement, then absolutely, and I have done it. But I would say it's less common. So when they first come in, they're their primary complaints are musculoskeletal.
Right.
Their, you know, neck pain and muscular pain and sometimes nausea, but not typically dizziness, at least not right away.
Right.
So I would say we sometimes have a conversation about, you know, these are all possibilities of this is, if you start to see these symptoms, this would be the appropriate place to go for some follow-up evaluation.
Right. Great. So it's kind of in the background of what things are available to you, but the primary
Absolutely.
Presentation is pain and et cetera from the neck injury.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but, you know, having said that, I will say that I have had occasion where there are patients that it'll almost come in passing. We're going through, a typical whiplash exam, and as we go through normal range of motion testing, they say, that kind of makes me dizzy. That kind of makes me spin.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then we tailor it to what their symptom presentation is.
Right. Great. So let's say a person with vertigo comes into the emergency department. They are triaged by the nurse. They go to the physician, and the physician doesn't rule out everything. The physician thinks, okay, this person's having an acute Meniere's attack. They have a history of Meniere's, or maybe they have vestibular migraine or something along those lines that really do require some medical treatment. Do they ever refer to physical therapy to be another resource, maybe an outpatient follow-up, maybe education in how to limit movement while their symptoms are exacerbated, or does that person mm-hmm. bypass physical therapy?
I would say some of that depends on the physician, but I would say in general, they may not be a physical therapy consult in the emergency department, but as time has gone on and we've been able to educate the physicians, we do have a couple of local physical therapy clinics that actually specialize in vestibular therapy, and so now they know that that's available. They're much more likely to refer the patients, in addition to referring them to either ENT or neurology or some other specialty to get further diagnostics or treatment done. In addition to that, they'll also consider referral to outpatient therapy for treatment.
Okay, so they don't typically see physical therapy in the emergency room setting, but it seems like the trend is better that they are placing an outpatient referral.
Much more so
as
now.
As a trend, yeah.
Much more so now, for sure, yeah. And typically in the ER, I would say it's more uncommon for someone to, have Meniere's or labyrinthitis diagnosed in the ER, with the exception being someone who has a history of,
right.
of one or the other.
Right.
Yeah, if they have a history, then they assume it's, I think they probably assume it's after ruling out any other, you know, more dangerous disorder, they're identifying, okay, this is probably an exacerbation of the Meniere's or labyrinthitis, and then give them follow-up instructions.
Right.
For each diagnosis.
Okay, so then
I think there would be potential, but I think that because there's besides education, there's not a lot that we're doing in the immediate
right
for treatment. I think we're not thought of as much, and that just may be an education from my end to them.
Right,
I'd say there may be other things that we can provide.
Absolutely. So you probably have, I'm guessing, a process for follow-up and the PT's role upon discharge from the emergency department, regardless of diagnosis or problem. So let's say it's a knee problem or they've had BPV and you've treated it. Do you send them away with any kind of home program? Do you send an automatic referral? Is there a phone number they can call if they get a recurrence? You know, kind of what's mm-hmm. that? How do they go back out into society? What do they take with them?
Gotcha. So ours is some of it depends on how they respond to treatment. So if they have really good resolution of symptoms, which many of them do, then I give them a lot of information about here are follow-up clinics if these symptoms haven't subsided or if they come back. Here are clinics locally that you don't have to make another emergency room visit. You can see them directly for this information. I do have a lot of pre-printed educational information about BTPD, the causes, the home treatment. I think there was a study, I think in 2010, that talked about the efficacy of doing the Epley maneuver even when someone is just instructed how to do it. So, as we go through the Epley maneuver in the ER, once a patient has sort of had a good response to that, they then know how to do it themselves, instruct them in how to do it themselves, so they can attempt that first if it's indicated. But we definitely give them follow-up information on where the local clinics are, including phone numbers and everything else. So they get a handout of specific information about BPPD, etiologies and treatments and follow-up. And I've modified it some over the years just because initially we used to give them a pretty strict post-treatment protocol with not moving, sleeping in an upright position and all that, all those kind of things. But there have been studies since that say, well, that doesn't seem to make a big difference as far as their long-term outcomes. And in some cases, might even, if they are still having any symptoms, avoiding those positions would inhibit the habituation that happens when they do. So we give them instructions and where to follow up, and then information as well.
Okay. And then does it seem to be working? It's simply your opinion anecdotally, but do you see frequent flyers come in with BPPV every 6 months, or does it seem like, or maybe you have relationships with the clinics that you refer to, if they have a recurrence, they go to them. Do you have any sort of information about what actually does happen in follow-up?
I have, the one advantage of Flagstaff, it's a pretty small community, and the physical therapists in this town are pretty good about it. I communicate a lot with the therapists in town, especially if I refer patients to their clinics. So I do talk to them, and I do hear about the patients that do follow up, and sometimes they contact me. So it can go both ways as far as the follow up goes. But they, I would say, I see a very low reoccurrence of visits to the emergency department for this problem.
Great.
And so one could make the jump that it's because they know where to go to get that treatment versus coming to the ER. So I would say it's still a pretty low percentage of the patients we see in general. But the ones that we do see, I see a very low reoccurrence rate.
Right. Yeah, that's great. It'd be great to study, kind of follow those people and what happens to them long term.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see a lot of indications for outcome studies.
Right. And now especially
in that regard, I think that would be.
Yeah, with healthcare reform and the use of emergency departments and the uninsured and everything that's kind of coming to light, I think physical therapists in the emergency department are really well poised to show how you do make a difference, perhaps.
Absolutely.
I believe it.
Yeah,
but
there is
utilization.
For sure.
So that kind of leads us to, the future. So where do you see physical therapy services in the emergency department changing, say, in the next 5 years or even 10 years? Or what changes do you think would be beneficial? What would you like to see improve?
Well, what I'd really like to see is more direct access to physical therapy services. Not just in the idea of having physical therapy available in the emergency department, because it's still relatively, from what I know of people across the country, there's still very few emergency departments that have physical therapy available.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the first step, is I'd love to see physical therapy in every ER.
Yes.
At the very least, available in every ER.
Yeah.
That they have access. A lot of hospitals tell me they have access just on an on-call or a paging system. But the problem is when you're not in there, there's not the opportunity to educate the physicians and the nurses and everything else and build that collegial relationship. Otherwise, they don't, you know, they think about you in extreme cases, but they don't think about this huge vast majority of patients that can benefit, which they do if you're there
right.
all the time.
So absolutely.
On a large scale, I'd love to see physical therapy in every emergency department. And within that, I would love to see more direct access. So in an ideal setting, I would love to see, you know, the triage setting identify a musculoskeletal injury and have physical therapy be able to see them right away. So, that may be, I don't know that physicians will ever be completely comfortable with physical therapists seeing them initially, but you know, as your listeners know, that we're very good at differential diagnosis, and we know what we don't know. So, especially in the emergency setting, it's very important to be able to engage that. And my thought would be, if you know, we see musculoskeletal disorders in the course of our exam, we see that there's evidence that maybe it's not a musculoskeletal disorder, then the referral goes to the physician.
Right.
But so you see, it's more of it would be a change in the way it's done now. The way it's done now, they always see the physician first, and then are referred to us. So
right.
I'd love to see in the future. I would love to see us working more on an even greater collegial level and being able to see them directly.
Right.
So I think it would cut costs. It would cut time
mm-hmm.
in the ER. They would. So those are the kind of things I think I would like to see. I think as far as just getting more physical therapists into more ERs, we're seeing conversations happen all over the country about, I get calls all the time about people who are interested in starting a program of physical therapy in the ER. And so the ABPA has actually done a great job of creating a toolkit, which is on their website, it's called an emergency department toolkit, I think is the name of it, and it has a whole host of resources and list of information about some things that are beneficial to those starting a program. So they have a blog that people have conversations throughout the country that this is what's happening in my ER and how do you guys handle this, and so conversations are definitely going up. So hopefully we'll meet that goal.
That's great. That's a great resource. I'm glad you brought that up. Excellent. Well, those are all the questions I had for you today, unless there's anything else you'd like to add, anything we forgot to cover.
I think we did a pretty good job.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
I can talk about it all day.
And I could listen to it all day. I don't know about our listeners, but I truly feel this is a really exciting place for physical therapists to be poised, and the vestibular portion of the, you know, exam is one small piece, but I think also a very important piece for our patients. It can really kind of transform how patients with BPPV have been treated in the past.
Absolutely, and I think that when it's appropriate and when it's correctly diagnosed and the treatment implemented, it's so successful, and patients have such a good outcome from it that I hope to see it employed in other settings for sure.
Right, that's great. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Lisa, and our listeners. On behalf of the Vestibular Special Interest Group of the Neurology Section, I thank you for participating in our discussion today, and please stay tuned for our upcoming monthly podcast. Have a good day.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.